good evening and welcome to the August meeting for the National Federation of the Blind of Indiana at-large chapter. I'm President Tyler Shirk. I want to thank everybody for being here. For our guests, Rosie, how do you pronounce your last name?
Bichelle.
Bichelle. For our guests, would everyone like to introduce themselves?
Sure, this is Rosie. I'll go ahead first and then I'll pass it to my colleague, Sam. As I said a few moments ago, my name is Rosie Bichelle. I'm a staff attorney at Disability Rights Advocates, which is a nonprofit that works across the country to advance the rights and vindicate the rights of people with disabilities. And one area that we've worked on is increasing access to voting, especially absentee voting for folks with print disabilities, including by representing the American Council of the Blind of Indiana in a suit in the state of Indiana regarding the absentee voting system there. So I'll pass it now to my colleague Sam for his introduction.
Hi, I am Sam Adams. I am a senior attorney with Indiana Disability Rights. Indiana Disability Rights is a part of the protection and advocacy system for the state of Indiana. We are an independent state agency that supports and advocates for the rights of people with disabilities in Indiana, including, as relevant here, voting rights. And I am part of the team in the lawsuit involving the American Council for the Blind of Indiana against various state officials concerning accessible absentee votes. So I'll sort of briefly go through what the lawsuit is about, maybe a refresher for some, but if others aren't as aware, get a little bit of background on what the case is about, and sort of give you an idea of where things are today and what we might expect in November. So the lawsuit that we brought is on behalf of American Council of the Blind of Indiana, Indiana Disability Rights, and three individuals. One of them is Honda. The lawsuit is against the Indiana Secretary of State, the Indiana Election Division, and the Indiana Election Commission. We originally filed in December of 2020, alleging that what we'll call Indiana's at-home absentee voting program violates the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 as it pertains to voters with print disabilities. That term we loosely define as voters who are unable to independently complete a ballot on their own, either due to visual impairment, dexterity impairment, or other disabilities. At the time the lawsuit was filed, voters with print disabilities had three options for voting, essentially. One was to vote in person on election day. And for in-person voting, every polling location is supposed to have accessible voting machines. The extent that those are actually available varies, but it's supposed to be there. Another option is early voting, which would also be in person, but just not on election day. And the third option was through what we call the traveling election board. And that's two individuals who would come to the voter's house and assist them in completing a paper ballot. It would require that the voter coordinate to schedule the traveling board to come to their house. There's a fairly short window of time that's available. I believe it's 19 days during at some point leading up to the election. And so those were the options as the law stood at the time the lawsuit was filed in 2020. In 2021, the legislature passed a law known as SEA 398. It became effective July 1st, 2021, and the first election that it was in place for was the primary this past May. What the law was supposed to do was open up more accessible options for voters with print disabilities to vote absentee. And specifically, the law required the Secretary of State and the Indiana Election Division to implement a plan for accessible absentee voting for voters with print disabilities. And in particular, the law said that any of those options are supposed to be compliant with the web content accessibility guidelines. The way that it that has been decided, and it also was to open up a process under another law called UOCAVA. I can't remember what that all stands for, to voters with print disabilities. That law is a federal law that applies to military and overseas voters, and it allows them to request, receive, and return completed ballots by email and fax. So SEA 398 was supposed to open up that process to voters and disabilities. So the state agencies did implement a plan for that law, SEA 398. However, the policy that they issued did not make any provisions for making ballots and a required secrecy waiver form accessible. Their plan was to have the counties send PDFs of ballots by email or fax them if somebody wanted, but faxes are never going to be accessible. And the secrecy waiver that has to be filled out to use those types of ballots required that the voter sign it. And that would either be by hand, or they said it could be done with a mouse or trackpad. So if we saw that these processes that were added under SEA 398 were not going to be accessible. A PDF ballot can be made accessible, but we had some very serious concerns that the counties were not going to do what was needed to make them compatible with screen readers. And the required secrecy waiver, because it had to be signed either by hand or even with a mouse or a trackpad, is not going to be something that voters with print disabilities would be able to do independently. So our contention in the lawsuit is that the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, requires that voters with print disabilities be able to cast an absentee ballot privately and independently, just like voters who don't have those disabilities. And we are contending that the options that the state has provided so far do not allow for that. Because you either have to rely on the traveling board, which is not private or independent, or and the other options that they provided were not accessible, so they're just not an option. So earlier this year, we requested the court to issue a preliminary injunction that would have required the state to allow more options for absentee voting by voters with print disabilities. Specifically, we requested that the court make the traveling board optional and instead allow voters to rely on the assistance of somebody other than the traveling board to complete and return paper mail ballots. And second, to establish or create what we call a remote accessible vote by mail system, or RAVM, which is essentially an electronic application that allows the voter to receive, fill out, and return the ballots. There are a number of companies that produce these programs, and some of them are done to be accessible for voters who have to rely on screen readers or other assistive technology. The whole purpose of them is to give these voters an accessible way to complete an absentee ballot. So that's what we asked the court to order for the May 2022 primary. So the court Granted our request in part. The court granted our request that the traveling board be made optional and allow voters to rely on someone else for assistance. The only caveat on that is that they are allowed to rely on an employer or a union representative, but you didn't have to rely on the traveling board, those two people that you'd have to have come to your house, but you could rely on somebody else to assist you. Our request for the RABBM, the court denied that. And the reason the court gave was that the judge determined that it was too close to the election to order the state to make that big of a change. So essentially, the court said, I can't order this now, but I'll consider it again, and we'll consider it again in the future. So obviously, the May 2022 primary has come and gone. For that election only, the traveling board was optional and voters could rely on someone else for assistance. But in terms of the so-called accessible ballots, that was a mess. The form for requesting the accessible ballot was originally offered only in an inaccessible PDF format. They did eventually post a web form that you could use to request a ballot, but that was only put up about a day before what many counties thought was the deadline to submit a request. So there was a lot of confusion about whether requests were timely, and it may have resulted in some voters not getting an absentee ballot, or and then because some of them may not have been able to vote on election day, lost their ability to vote at all. And then for people who did successfully request the email ballot, the county sent inaccessible PDFs that were not accessible to voters with print disabilities and could not be completed with assistive technology. Essentially, all the people who got these, the voters who got these ballots, still had to have somebody else help them out, which goes against the principle that we are arguing about, which is that voters should be able to vote privately and independently.
He's provided the background leading up to the last election and the preliminary injunction that we received for the last election. And we have now, understanding that relief was limited to just the May 2022 primaries. We've been working on, we've sought relief for elections going forward, primarily via something called a motion for summary judgment, which basically, in a nutshell, is, and forgive me if I'm telling you all things that you already know, but just to be perfectly clear, it's a kind of legal motion that basically says the issues that that we raised at the time of the complaint are still active. There's no argument that they're active. You, judge, need to go ahead and decide on this case without even going to trial, basically. So in that, what we requested was once again reiterated the request for the traveling board to permanently be made optional rather than mandatory for folks who do want to, who would like to request assistance of someone of their choosing rather than needing to rely on the traveling board. We once again reiterated our request for the state to work with a remote accessible remote accessible vote by mail system, drawing on the failures that we saw in the May 2022 primary and the continued inaccessibility of the state's proposed quote unquote accessible electronic voting mechanisms. We really reiterated that the systems that they're proposing are not working, and the issues are still live, and we still request this tool that is known to be used elsewhere already accessibly, including in states like North Carolina and Maryland and many others. So we filed that. I've sort of lost track of time at this point, but I believe that was at the end of June, right before July, we filed, we submitted that filing. Although it was at some point in the summer, I apologize. My time, I've really lost track of time and I don't have the filing right in front of me, but in the last few months we filed that. And then we're in a position right now where we received a response filing from the other side. And we're waiting on the judge to rule on that motion for summary judgment. In the meantime, we also, the judge requested that we try to negotiate some kind of settlement agreement with the Indiana state agencies ahead of the next election, basically meaning that we work out these issues and come to an agreement outside of court. We can't really go into the details of that because those are confidential, those discussions, but that is also, so there are these kinds of parallel tracks, one being potential settlement negotiation and the other being that we continue to litigate in court. So I think one thing that I can say is that there have been several solutions kind of thrown around, and so far it's not clear that there will be an accessible, that the state will on their own provide an acceptable means for voting ahead of the November elections without a court necessarily telling them to do so. Sam, I don't know if you had more you wanted to say about where we are right now.
I think that pretty much covers it. So unfortunately, all we can say are things are moving, and or things will be different possibly for the election than they are today. But without knowing more about what the state may offer, because they are, according to them, they are continuing to rework and hopefully improve their processes. And until we have a ruling from the court on our motion, we don't know what the options are going to be in November. If nothing changed from today, the options would be voting in person, either on election day or early, or relying on the traveling board. We don't expect those to be the only option. Well, then there would be whatever email ballots that the state offers. But based on what we saw in May, we don't have much hope that that will be an accessible option. So other than that, we just expect that things will change. And we're sorry we don't have anything more concrete to give you today, but we certainly are willing to keep you informed when we do know more.
This is Rosie again, and I would just want to note that one thing that we would really encourage all of you to do is to reach out to your local county elections agencies, whether that be the county clerk or a county elections board, to communicate to them that there is really a need for accessible electronic voting. I say this because it's really important that the state agencies hear from local agencies that this is a need that their voters have expressed. And it's important to have pressure from all sides, but we think that it could be helpful to get that kind of message to the state via the counties. It's also just important that counties understand. I mean, one thing that I think Sam touched on from the May primary was that there was a lot of confusion at the county level about what they were supposed to be doing. And so if counties have a little bit more warning that folks are looking out for accessible options, and they may be a little bit more tuned in to what they need to do when the actual election comes around. One other thing that I would say is that we, as Sam said, we really don't know at this point. We're not really sure what's going to happen ahead of the November election. And we are at this point just kind of, I mean, as I said, there are kind of parallel things happening, but in terms of getting a court order, that is something that we don't really have control over at this point. We really just have to wait and see what happens and when. But it is possible that there could be for some kind of, I mean, this is kind of in an ideal situation. If some solution does emerge before November, then it's possible that they would, we would want to tap into networks of voters who could jump to our aid in testing out a new system. And so if you're interested in doing so, understanding that it could be pretty last minute and that there's no guarantee that this will necessarily happen, then we would love to hear from you ahead of time so that we have those this contact set up in the event that it has to be a pretty quick turnaround. So this is Rosie again. I think with that, that concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer questions or listen to concerns at this point, if anyone has any.
Corey, for different states, you guys are referring to the Democracy Live type system, correct?
This is Rosie, and I'll chime in. There are multiple different systems that are used. So, I mean, I referred to two states, Maryland and North Carolina. And North Carolina uses Democracy Live. Maryland uses a system that they devised on their own, that the state created on their own, I believe in 2013, or could have been earlier than that. But it's been in use for nearly a decade, if not more than a decade already.
Has the state of Indiana came to that point where they wanted to ask the different agencies what they thought about the different systems, or have they even gotten to that point yet?
This is Rosie. That's a good question, and I'm not sure we really have the answer to that. I think what Sam explained from the May primary was that the state was really intent on coming up with their own sort of PDF email system at that point, and we don't really have insight into their analysis of other systems since then. It would be useful, I'm just kind of reiterating my plug to reach out to your local county election agencies, because I think it's useful for you to even notify them about the existence of different kinds of accessible voting, absentee voting technologies. Again, just thinking about different directions that we can put pressure on the state.
Hey, question for Rosie or Sam. Right. Are there any provisions to ensure that the two folks from the board of your county are in opposing parties?
That's a requirement under the law. That's how they are. That's a requirement for them as it exists under the law.
Right. The reason I asked that was that came up when I lived in Evansville in 2020, and they said two people, and they would not make that guarantee. Of course, then they said they weren't going to do anything because of COVID, but I was just curious. I thought that was the law, that had to be one from each party.
This is Rosie. Yeah, that is correct. And as you have already pointed out, it might not always happen in practice. So another reason why we think the traveling board may be a flawed system, and we would like to have other options made permanent for voters in Indiana.
This is Ronnie Thomas. I live out in the country, and what we vote at is our local fire department. They're volunteer. And this last election that we had, I went in and I told them, I said, I got vision issues. And they all kind of looked at me like, well, what do you expect me to do about it? And I was told, I had a friend of mine helped me. And then afterwards, everybody said, well, you couldn't do that. You had to sign papers to get permission to do that.
My understanding is that every polling location is required to have an accessible voting machine. I do not, off the top of my head, know all of these requirements. Maybe you and I can have a separate call sometime, and we can sort of go over what your issues were. And I can see if there's anything that Indiana Disability Rights could do to either assist you in the future, or potentially maybe provide some education to your polling place to make sure that it goes better in the future.
Are they educated on to how to help the blind and visually impaired? Do you have a training every year or every whatever? Or is it basically hear the machine, go out and do it?
This is Rosie, and I also, like Sam, don't have all of these requirements just off the top of my head, since I've been focusing on the absentee voting space rather than in person. But my understanding is that in Indiana, the statewide agencies, the Secretary of State and the Indiana Election Division, I believe are supposed to provide a training, or they do provide a training every year to county elections officials regarding updates in systems ahead of elections in that year. And my understanding is that a component of that is about accessibility, voting accessibility. So I don't have a real firm answer on that, but you do raise it. I mean, I'm pretty sure there is a requirement specifically for training on how accessible voting machines work. To your point that it wouldn't really make sense for there to be accessible voting machines in every location if there aren't any poll workers who know how to operate them, and therefore can't really tell voters how to do so either.
This is Kinzinski. In the last couple of years or so, my polling place people have been pretty educated about how to make the voting machines accessible. But I know in pretty recent years, years, they weren't. I basically had to walk them through the process myself as much as I knew. Basically had to train them each time I needed to vote. And even though it's gotten better for me personally in Greene County, I'm sure that there are probably others in other counties that are still experiencing these issues, and they really shouldn't have to experience. People should know how to operate these things. And not everyone's as technical as I am, and I'm not technical.
This is a type of thing that Indiana Disability Rights, outside of this particular lawsuit, this is a type of thing that, you know, we look out for. When you experience those types of problems, it really helps if you let us know, because we can go out, we do go out and visit some polling locations, but we can't, obviously, we don't have the manpower to go out and visit every polling location in the state. We're not going to see all of them on election day. So we do rely on the community to let us know when they're experiencing problems, and then that can help us to identify them and point them out to people who might be able to do something about it. Again, I don't know all of the exact requirements off the top of my head, but we do have some other people that work on at IDR who work on the polling place accessibility issues. So we can try to get some more information to you if you need it.
I want to acknowledge Abby, who asked for the floor to address some concerns.
Hi, I'm Abby. Thank you, Michael. Last November, I wasn't still comfortable going out to vote. So I did ask my local county, which I'm in Decatur County. And usually when I do go to the polls, I will say that whether it be if I vote early and go to the courthouse, they're very helpful. And the times that I have gone to my actual polling place on election day, they seem pretty jazzed up and like, oh yeah, we finally get to use this machine. Thank you for coming to the polling place. Because, you know, we don't have a lot of pollers that, or voters, excuse me, a lot of voters that, you know, are disabled that require this machine. So they were very excited when I was able to actually go to the polling place. But this past year, I called and I asked the clerk if they had any accessible means for, you know, voting. And she says, well, in order to send you either the election board, you know, either to have them come or even to get you signed up, you know, to try the what you guys were talking about, I guess, with the PDF, you have to fill out this form. And she was supposed to send me a link to the form. I never received it. But then I did receive a message from, and I even checked my junk folders and all that mess. And she sent me another message and said, did you receive my link to blah, 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 blah? And of course, I had to say, no, I received nothing from you. Well, then I never heard anything from her again. So I personally did not vote this year because, you know, I got stuck in that waiting loop and I didn't have a way to go to the polls on polling day, voting day, election day. So that was the story that I think Wanda was referring to when she said, you know, that about she wanted me to share my experience. So that was my experience with my wonderful county folks here.
This is Rosie. Thanks so much for sharing, Abby. And that is, it sounds incredibly frustrating. And that's precisely the kind of issue that we are hoping to address in this case. So clearly there still needs to be a lot more work done. The May primary was a bit of a mess. It sounds like your county, it was a bit of a mess in your county as well. This is the, I think, why it's important for folks, individual voters. I mean, we're going to keep pushing in the ways that we can in the context of our case at the state agencies. But this is another reason why I think it's really important for individual voters to reach out to their county elections agencies. And I know it's frustrating to have the burden of educating folks on accessibility, but it's important that these conversations happen before the elections actually come up. So now, hopefully, now that you've had that frustrating experience with your county,
I'll call them tomorrow and see where they're at.
Right. Yeah. I think that would be really great. But please keep us updated. I'd like to stay in touch to hear how things go forward. And I mean, going forward. And I'm really sorry that you were deprived of a vote in the last election. And I really hope that doesn't happen for anyone going forward.
Thank you.
Okay. When the leaders of our organization discuss this, we're concerned that many people just don't vote. Either they're afraid of the process or whatever the reason, but do we have any actual numbers of how many blind folks would be eligible to to even use the machines?
There are about 145,000 Indiana residents over the age of 18 with blindness or low vision. So it could be, and that doesn't include folks with disabilities affecting manual dexterity, other kinds of print disabilities that could be affected by this. So it also, I mean, not all of those people necessarily vote, but they are eligible to vote. And so we would say that this case and this issue would affect more than, I mean, roughly 150,000 or more voters in Indiana. The judge, when she issued the preliminary injunction for May, did require the state to kind of track who used the email-based voting in the last election. That being said, I don't believe that it's something we can publicly report. Sam, you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. Also, because of all of the confusion at the county level, the confusion about the deadline with the request form, the fact that the request form itself was inaccessible until 24 hours before the sort of deadline. We think that the last election is not something that's necessarily indicative of elections going forward. And so those specific numbers from May 2022, I don't think are necessarily relevant when we're thinking about this issue going forward, just because it was, hopefully a pretty singular singular election and how poorly it went.
Giving contact info, Rosie and Sam, so people can reach out to you. And
my email address is rbichell@dralegal.org. That's rbichell@dralegal.org. And my phone number is 510-529-3432. Again, that's 510-529-3432. My organization's website is dralegal.org.
This is Sam. My email address is samadams@indianadisabilityrights.org, samadams@indianadisabilityrights.org. My phone number is 317-722-3445. That's 317-722-3445. Also, Indiana Disability Rights, the main phone line is 317-722-5555, 317-722-5555. And our website is indianadisabilityrights.org. It has all of our various ways to contact us as well.
Rosie?
Yes, Wanda?
I just wanted to make a statement or question. I wanted to thank you both very much for taking out your time and effort to come inform us and everything.
Thank you, Wanda. It's really our pleasure. And it's really important that we be connected with as many affected voters as we can in this case. And so I'm really grateful for everyone's time tonight and for folks sharing their experiences.
I'll chime in and say thank you for having us.